You mentioned there that at Motherwell you made your Scotland debut in the squad. How was that feeling when you first got called up for your country?
Well, before that, when Bertie Vokes came in, he wanted to see everybody, I think, that was eligible for Scotland. And they had it was a Scotland Futures game, or no, a game, it was like a meet-up, training meet-up. And I was, Eric Black was the manager, so I hadn't played that many games. And he pulled me after training and says, oh, you've called up to this Scotland squad. And I'd been in an under-20s tournament to the Foyle Cup or the Milk Cup, whatever it was. And up until then, I'd never been in any Scotland squad for young age. The first one was that, then I got called up and I thought, this is brilliant, I'm going to train with these players. Mm-hmm. And then obviously I got called up to Scotland and when I was younger, I had an unbelievable belief that I was brilliant. I wasn't arrogant. Uh-huh. I just thought, I'm good enough. I'll go and show everybody I can play. And I just thought, I looked at some of the players and thought, I think I'm ready to go and see what it's like.
Because I've spoke to other boys like Aidan, they had that same belief. Do you think you need that to play at the top level? Huh?
I think you need. Well, if you don't believe in yourself, then.
But do you think there's a lack of that now?
Aye, I think, as I said, young boys make a mistake that he's good in.
Because they get shouted at.
They shout themselves, and I think they watch the top level, and they see all the good stuff that these players do, and don't think they make any mistakes. So it's like they watch maybe all the stuff you see now on Instagram, YouTube. Uh-huh. It's all edited. Uh-huh. You don't see them messing up. Uh-huh. So they think, oh, these are, and I think the pressure on them to be perfect. I just think that's society in general. But getting into football, it's. To be perfect, the pressure on people is incredible. They're desperate not to make a mistake. And they're in a rush to just bypass that initial phase of making a mistake. Mm-hmm. And going, oh, well, I made a mistake, sorry. No, like, you used to get it. You make a mistake, hold your horns up. You'd have the old guy shouting at you, somebody else shouting at you, the manager. Oh, right, hold on. Mm-hmm. I know I've made a mistake. Mm-hmm. Let's move on, we'll go on, mate. And I think you need to be a strong person to deal with that.
Mm-hmm. See, when you first went into that Scotland, the setup, how was the training compared to Motherwell? What was the standard? Was it a massive difference?
Aye, it was obviously a higher tempo. The players are... initially, at the start, I can't really remember too much.
Who were the ones that stood out? Can you remember thinking what to play?
When I first went, it was a lot of, as I said, it was mere... People were getting a chance to come in and out, so some of them were good and some of them weren't good, so it was more a bit of a trial and error. Obviously, when I was more established and the squad was kind of more established, it was the standard of training was frightening because you've got the best players and everybody wants to play. Mm-hmm. And you're obviously players, I didn't play every week for my club, but when I went, I made sure I trained hard enough so that people didn't say, oh, he's no fit, he's no match sharp, so that people would say, right, if I need them, I can use them. And everybody was the same. Tackles flying in. You couldn't train like that anymore. Because mm-hmm. the boys smash you.
Would they?
That was it. You didn't fall out. It was just, that was how the standard of training.
Would Bertie Vokes, would he, wasn't it?
He used to smash you.
Did he?
Wee Bertie,
he joined
Bertie and Tam Burns.
The wee Puma Kings on. I remember Tam used to
Bertie and Tam would do the boxes, so you'd think, right, obviously he was a great player. So he'd go in the box, and maybe you'd have an older coach or a manager. They'd lose the ball and put somebody else in. Uh-huh. No, they'd keep it in. And if you passed it, bang.
I can't remember, Tommy showed us a video you'd kept off and they were both of them were sliding.
Aye, smash it. Smash it. Wasn't he like... No, because he was a manager. I just imagine that's the way he was. And it was like, well, if I'm going to go on the outside, I'm going to go in. Uh-huh. And if you pass it about, I'm going to smash you. And that's what they've done.
Brilliant.
The two of them done it.
Uh-huh. What was it about yourself you think that Bertie Vokes liked so much? Was it because you were a wee cheeky boy?
I think it was, the cheeky boy one comes up. But that was obviously a wee bit of lost in translation, but I think we all got what it meant. And I think it was that gallousness. It was, same again, I didn't disrespect people, but I just had a belief. I had... You know, I didn't let things bother me and I just kept going and I think he liked that.
Tommy would have loved that as well, mate, because he loves boys. Was he good for you, Tommy, when you first went in?
When I went to the Future Squad, I'd spoke to him, I think it was up at Seamill, and as I got in, I was obviously brought up a Celtic fan, I love Tommy Burns, mm-hmm. and he pulled me at the side and I was like, this is brilliant. Mm-hmm. And he says, just go and do what you can do. He says, I'm telling you now, if I was Celtic manager, I'd have you in my team. And I was like,
he had a great way of making you feel so good, didn't he?
He was brilliant. And he was always there for me. you know what he's like. His one-liners were brilliant. It was the same five or six phrases, but it just got you every
time. I could get boys at the social club to come in there.
You've got guys that can do that. Everything all right at home, all that stuff. It was brilliant.
You've been drinking with your brownies. Drinking at breakfast again. Oh, brilliant, eh? But they, so, because Barry Vogts gets a hard time, didn't he?
But he does, but he had, I mean, we had what we didn't think was going to happen. It's been 20 years or whatever since we made a tournament, and we didn't think that was going to happen, but all the players got old at the same time, so mm-hmm. We'll need to make a whole new team here. And it was a time where a lot of foreign guys were coming into the game and there wasn't a lot of players coming through, so Bertie had to go and make up a new team. And by doing that, he had to have a look at players. He didn't have a great knowledge of British football, by all accounts, and he had to go and bring players in that, as I said, he handed out a lot of cats, but you have to filter through the rubbish almost to get what you're wanting. And mm-hmm. I mean, we made the playoffs. It was another glorious failure, but it was certainly for me and the younger ones, Fletch, it was great for us because it was the same. He had that encouragement. It was hard. It was hard, but he had the encouragement of, don't worry about it, just go on with it. And, mm-hmm. and we'll take care of it.
I need to ask about obviously the flight you missed home.
Yep.
What was it, a night out?
Night out at the end of the. Aye, probably. A night out at the end of the. As I said, I wasn't a big drinker, so uh-huh. I got a wee bit excited, made my debut, and obviously missed my flight. Tam Burns phoned me when I get back. He says, oh, have you spoke to the manager? I says, no, I'm no way to speak to the manager. I was terrified. And he says, no, just phone him, he'll be fine. He's expecting your call. And I was like, oh, dreading it. So I phoned him, and he says, I says, oh, boss, it's James. He says, oh, how are you? Are you okay? You have a good sleep and that? I says, aye, fine. He says, I'm really sorry. I've let you down and let myself down and everything. And he says, don't worry about it. He says, everybody misses flights. I've missed the train and I've missed the bus. And he says, that's fine.
Spot on me,
because I thought, right, my Scotland career's finished. Uh-huh. And then I think I might have been in the next squad, but I just thought, the way he dealt with that, even being foreign and what you think of the Germans, it's, mm-hmm. you know, don't cross the line and everything's got to be perfect. It was absolutely brilliant.
What did you think of that, the publicity that got? Was it a bit of a shock?
It was a wee bit. I was embarrassed because everywhere I went, oh, look, and I was like, oh, right. And it was embarrassing, but I say him again, I was a young boy, so I didn't really, uh-huh. I had nothing, I stayed with mum and dad, I didn't have a girlfriend or anything, and I didn't have anybody to answer to really, apart from the manager, my manager at Motherwell, and my mum and dad, uh-huh. and they were all fine, so I was all right. I just straight away, as soon as they were all fine, I went, well, it'll blow over. And then I think flying back into one of the London airports, it was the same time Roy Keane had walked out of
the Ireland camp,
the Ireland camp, so when I flew, touched down, there was all this press, and I thought, no way, no way. I play for Motherwell, what they want, and it was obviously for him, so.
The Motherwell Evening Express.
So I was delighted that
he did that. Yeah. Aye, I'm sorry. Brilliant, eh? Obviously, Bertie's best bit was getting to the playoffs with Holland, you scored that goal. Is there regrets that you never went through, Jink, or were we not good enough?
Nah, I think the Saturday game, the first leg was as good as we were going to play and as bad as they were going to play. And the second leg was as good as they were going to play against as bad as we could play.
And were they good on the second leg?
Brilliant. Brilliant. What they had was a team full of massive players, superstars. And then they lost that game. So they brought in Schneider, I think, played his first game. And we're like, ah, wow. This wee 18-year-old for Ajax, brilliant. They've gave up here. Unbelievable he was. He was the best player on the pitch.
Was he popping it, huh?
Brilliant. Scored. I think he scored two goals. Set some up. And I just think it went. Whatever could have went wrong for us went wrong. I remember looking up at the scoreboard and it was 6-0. I think we're still over half an hour to play. And I just thought,
get me up the road.
Keep it at six. Uh-huh. And that's something you don't think you should ever say, but you were thinking, keep it at six.
See, when you first went into Scotland, did you think the group of players that were there at that time with you and Fletch, we are good enough to make it to eventually get to a finals?
Aye, I think we had, I keep saying it, the same, like, it wasn't arrogance, it was just that I had a pure belief. First of all, myself, and obviously the more I played with Scotland, the better it got. I seemed to revel in playing for Scotland. Fletch was a young boy at Man United. I don't think he played many games. Bertie brought him in, and it was like we had Fergie, Davy Weir. We had a lot of good older ones as well. Fergie probably wasn't that old at the time, mind you, but it was like a good mix we had, and it was the start of building a good team, and we just felt as though we'd qualify. For me personally, I always thought, right, we'll qualify, but teams have qualified before. The aim for us is, once we've qualified, to go and get out of the groups and really make a statement for Scottish football, because it's something that we've never done. So that was a belief that we had as a team, and I think we had the players to do it, but just unfortunate we never done it.
Speaking of Scotland again, the Euro 2008 campaign everyone talks about, what was it about the Scotland team that made you play so well?
I think Walter Smith had come in, and we'd go at the start to finish off the Fiberti Volks, and it started to build a real spirit in the team. We had a lot of mixed Old Firm players. When they met up, it was Scotland, that was it. They still had guys that sat in different tables and stuff like that, but we kind of socialised a bit better in that campaign, and I think it was...
Was that just natural, or was it something?
It just felt like a club. Uh-huh. It was like a club atmosphere. Sometimes you go away, it's maybe who you're playing or where you're going to, or some of the guys in it. Maybe you don't like, you don't need to like everybody, that's not what I'm saying, but we just talk, everybody got on, you had a good laugh, the banter was brilliant.
Who was the characters, yourself?
Fletch was always there, everybody. That's what I'm saying, I wasn't any real quiet ones, but the main core of the squad was always the same, so it was like, we'd sit in a room like this, with a projector, playing Pro Evo or FIFA, whatever it was, like 10, 12, 15 of the squad. That's unheard of, that wouldn't happen.
That was
a club, that was like a club set up, and that's all you would have tournaments, first to three, three and a half, usual. If you stay on, get five, you need to stand behind the projector till the game, the next game finishes, so you're just on. So it was like wee things like that. We had a great spirit, and that came from obviously the management doing, and Alec McLeish carried that on, because the backroom staff kind of stayed the same, but it was a good atmosphere.
How was Walter Smith?
It was brilliant. Didn't say loads, just had an aura, respectful straight away. And it was the same, you had your shape and how you played and that, but it was going playing, play well. Walter, actually, when he first came in, he brought in Billy McCulloch. I don't know if you've saw the pictures of
Chelsea
match. Absolutely mental.
Is he funny, is he?
Brilliant. But like, Walter was dead serious all the time. And I think it was one of my first trips away. I missed Walter's first game, and I went away the next game, so he's done all the team talking, we're all get boots, everything's ready to go, you're just sitting, Walter's talking. And he's like, got his watch, and he goes, right, I've said everything I've got to say, Billy, up you get. And I'm like, Diff, what's going on here? My sewer up. He just starts telling jokes, rolling about the flare and all that. We're all pissing ourselves laughing.
And just to relax you before you went
out. And it was something I'd never saw before. Uh-huh. And that was the last thing you remember. You're still in the tunnel going, I'm doing all that. It was mental.
Because you obviously had Coisty and Tommy Burns as well. Was it a good mix between
the
two?
It was. Tommy, obviously, they had the Celtic Rangers thing, but...
We'd have a lot of banter about that. Uh-huh.
Definitely, uh-huh. Definitely. But they were good with people. They were good at managing people. Uh-huh. Some of the boys used to play cards, and it would get... heated. Kenny Miller and Neil McCann. Kenny, when he plays cards, wants to play everybody's horn for them, and Neil they're playing a game. I think it was Hearts they were playing, so it was, they all kind of knew, I don't know how to play it, but they knew what each other had, and they played the rang. Somebody played the rang card, so the two of them were shouting. I think it was Slovenia, we're away, so we were up, and it was like a mezzanine. Sitting at the top of the stairs, two of them are close to coming to blows, like screaming in each other's face, and Tam Burns comes walking up the stair. I was like, oh no, what's going to happen here? So he just walks right up and goes, oh, 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 oh. And the two of them just go, start laughing. That was it, done. Nothing more was said over it. Just killed it, stone dead. He was brilliant. Uh-huh. Even training, everything was serious, but as I said, he made a mistake. Tam was,
on you straight away.
We've got guys that can do that, and like brilliant.
Because what Walter Smith tells the story is that his first team taught, he looked around and Tommy was sleeping.
I used to sleep all the time. I'd do the video meeting and just everybody just see Tam seen falling back. Doing. So he's like, Tam's actually sleeping.
Not even for a laugh, he's actually sleeping.
A wee bit boring for you, Tam.
Because I think when Walter Smith and Ali McCoy went back to Rangers after Scotland, Tam came into the Celtic first team and his bags back, that's me off to Ibrox, lads.
I'm going to join the dream team. That was him. And then, even then, I think some of the boys are like, is he actually?
Some man. Obviously, we need to talk about the goal against France. You've spoken about it a lot, but what kind of feeling was that hitting that goal?
I have spoken about it quite a lot. I mean, initially when I hit it, I wasn't sure if it went in because it was so silent. It was like a stunned silence, and then the reaction obviously it went in, and it was just going back to saying about the Holland game. That was as good as we were going to play, and it wasn't even similar to that in terms of France were good that night, but we were really good. Mm-hmm. Everybody put in great performance. Craig Gordon was outstanding in goal. I always say Graham Alexander, never renowned for his pace up against Ribéry, and he played him out of the game. Graham was playing left back and Ribéry was playing the right wing, and it was a great performance for him. And it was just an overall, everybody talks about scoring that goal, but the team performance that night was unbelievable.
See, after the first leg, when you win, can you celebrate, or is it still quite
well? That one was we played, obviously it was in the group, so it was a Wednesday, and then you fly back. And generally, I was at Everton at the time, so I was training the next day. So
you've no
time. No, you've no time.
So you didn't really get a chance to enjoy it?
No, because we had went for that to playing Man United at home on a Saturday, so it was kind of
non-stop.
Although it was massive, and it sounds big time as anything, but I played against some of the players. I was used to playing against players at that level, and I was going to play against players just as good on a Saturday, so it wasn't like a one-off game. It was a one-off in terms of the goal and what it meant, but I had to be professional and just concentrate and getting a cool down the next day and get ready to, well, sit on the bench on the Saturday.
Obviously, George Burley then followed that period. What was it like seeing some of the things unfold? Was it hard?
Aye. It was difficult because we'd done so well. And
see, when he first got the job, was
a great appointment. I thought, on the face of it, obviously a job he'd done at Hearts. People say a lot, if they stayed at Hearts manager, they would have challenged probably for the league, and I believe that because they were doing so well. And when they came in, we thought, right, brilliant. We saw that Hearts team, they were attacking, they were expansive, and it wasn't going to work because that wasn't what we were used to doing. But it was exciting to think as an attacker, we're going to go and get at teams and we're going to go and steamroll them, and it didn't work out with them, and it's a shame, but sometimes that happens.
Was there concern straight away, or?
No, I mean, you know, sometimes managers have meetings and that, and they've got their AMB sayings, and boys used to pick up things like that, and some of the stuff was quite funny, which probably wasn't right, but I liked him. He tried to do it right, and I had a lot of respect for him, and it just didn't work out.
And then Craig Levein takes over.
Yep.
What occurred to result in what was it, you playing left out back 10? You're not happy with it?
No, I honestly don't know what happened. I went to one of his first meetings and I was injured, but I went anyway because he was new manager, and I always turned up and never pulled out any squads without going unless I was in hospital or really properly injured. But I had a groin strain and I went up, didn't train the day of the game, I think. And it was shooting, and it just wasn't right. And I thought, I'm going to have to come off here, so there's no point. So that was fine. Didn't have any problem with it. And then I played the next game, I think it was against Sweden. Away, we lost, but I'd played well. I thought I'd played well. Played wide left, Lee Wallace behind me, Gary Kenneth played. And I thought I played well. I tried, I was, as I said, wide left, 4-5-1. A couple of times, walked back, because I remember it sticking in my mind, and then we met up for the Lithuania game, we had a meeting, and he says, I just want to go over some things for the Sweden game. So it was five clips, and four of them were about me, no defending, or no doing what he wanted me to do. And I was like, I think I've done all right in that game. So for then, I knew I wasn't going to play, but I just thought, fine, he's a manager, I've been in places before. I'll just train hard, wait for my chance, and I'll take it. I'm not going to cause any problems because it was my Scotland. If you're not playing, then you just go home, mate, and work hard. So played the Lithuania game. We had a load of chances. I'd have definitely scored. I was playing well at the time, and I came on, done well. The next game, the fans obviously we drew nothing each. We had a few chances, we never took it. You get a bit of hard time in the press, and you get a hard time off the fans saying that myself and Boyd should have played. And I think leading up to the Liechtenstein game, it was some of the comments that he made were like, well, more or less, well, this is what you've asked for. Going like them to win the game for us then. And I was like,
putting all the pressure.
That's no somebody who wants you to do well. Mm-hmm. That's somebody who's kind of been forced into making a decision he doesn't want to make. For me, if you don't want me or Boydie or whoever to play, don't play them. And say, I pick a team and that's it. But played the game, and it's the worst game I've had for Scotland, and I played 48 times for Scotland, and it's the one game I remember being really poor. I don't think there's many more where I would say I was rubbish. I always seemed to play well for Scotland, and I was poor. But I think I knew the situation. I knew I should have played the week before. I wasn't sulking. And I just felt as though it was like, I tried too hard. That was my only thing. I tried too hard. I was trying to do too much. And he brought me in half time, says, making a change, you're coming off, called me lazy, says you're lazy, and I had a wee bit of argument, and then I just took all my stuff off and stormed into the shower. And that was it. The next week I'd won my game. I went back, and Art McLeish was my manager at Birmingham at the time, and he says, what about that? I says, I don't know, but I mean, I feel as though I was set up to. No, it wasn't his fault, I didn't play well, but it was like almost hoping that I'd fail. Uh-huh. I was poor, and I accept not playing well, but I don't accept being called lazy. I never have, I've never been lazy. So I wasn't happy about that, and I think we were preparing for the game. We played Liverpool at home on the Saturday. Peter Grant was assistant, and he came through and he went, manager's what I see, and I went, oh, I don't know. He says, this isn't what I need. Uh-huh. So he says, right, sit down. And I went, all right. And I had a good relationship with Alan McLeish. He goes, right, I'm not playing you off the left today. And I went, oh. He says, I'm going to play you up front. And I went, oh, brilliant. And he says, get up front, get in the hole, get back on, I think it was Steven Gerrard, get back on him, Lucas, make sure they don't get on the ball and that. Mm-hmm. We drew nothing each, but I played well, I got man of the match. And I just thought, for then, I was like, this is brilliant. Mm-hmm. I'll be fine, I'll get back in the squad and I'll go and show them I'm ready. And then the next week I done my cruciate and I was out for over a year, and that was it.
So did you ever speak to Craig Levein again though?
I spoke to, at the time leading up to it, I spoke to Boydie. Boydie was on the phone and he says, look, what we got to do? I says, I'm going to just get my head down, play for Birmingham, and the next squad, if I'm in it, I'm going to speak to him. And if I'm not in it, I'll phone him. I says, but I'm not doing it now because I don't think it's the time. I'd rather see him and speak to him face to face. He says, no, I'm phoning him. So I think Boydie phoned him and that was it. Boydie wasn't involved again. And then I got injured. So I just let it go. It was back and forth a wee bit in the press and I thought, right, I'm not talking about this anymore. It's done. Uh-huh. I don't want to detract from what the team are trying to do. It's always every time there's a meet-up, well, what do you think about this? And I just didn't want to be that guy. I'm not a bitter guy. And then I went to Sunderland. So it was maybe 2 years later, and he was still the manager. I don't know how long it was. I was playing a reserve game for Sunderland. Phil Bardsley was playing in it. Somebody, Big Mick, might have been there for Middlesbrough. Somebody else was there. So he was doing watching this at a training ground.
Right.
So I saw him. That was the first time I saw him. So I walked up to him. I think Big Mick was pulling him in awe. As I walked up to him, he went, you look sharp there. And I went, you sound surprised. And he went, no, I don't mean that. And I just says, look, there's a lot of stuff that went on. I never went through the whole thing. I says, I never phoned you because I wanted to speak to you. I says, but I wasn't happy how it was done. I've played under some great managers. I've played in the Premier League and I've no done that because I'm lazy. I'm not a lazy player. I don't like being called lazy. You can say whatever else you want, but I work hard. He says, no, look, I didn't handle it the right way, and if it happened to now, I would do it differently. So I'm really sorry. I says, that's fine. I says, all I wanted was to tell you that I'm not lazy and I didn't like the way it was handled. And he says, no, He says, that's I didn't handle it well. He says, if I pick you for the next squad, will you come in? I says, aye. I've never said I wouldn't. Mm. And he got sacked before the next squad. So it was all sorted. It just played out longer than it would. Mm. I've said this before as well. If you have any kind of argument with your manager or whatever on a Saturday, you go and see him on a Monday, or he sees you on a Monday, so it's done. But that was an international game where you leave, you're away down the road, you keep reading stuff about how you're lazy, how you're not good enough, how this and that.
And it just keeps going.
Whereas normally you go in and go, right, gaffer, I'm no happy. Either sorry for how I reacted, but I'm not accepting that. Right, fine, this is what we're doing, move on. Uh-huh. I never really got that opportunity. I did, it was just a wee bit longer in coming, but it was fine now. And I've saw Craig before, and it's not, I'm never going to be his best mate, but it's no something that eats away at me.
Obviously, you mentioned the 48 caps, a bit gutted that you never made 50, because you're such a great player for Scotland. They've been right for you to make 50 caps.
I'm no bitter about it. I wish that I did have 50, uh-huh. but I'm no bitter about it. I've got 48, you know, I was delighted to get one. So I got 48.
Some great memories.
Brilliant,
for them,
honestly. Uh-huh. Brilliant. The career, the Scotland career I had, I wish it was lasted longer, and I wish there was merit. But for what I had and what I'd done with Scotland, nobody can take that away from me.
All the best for whatever happens in the future, mate. Thanks
Cheers.
Very much for doing that.
No bother. Cheers.